With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Our next guest played offensive line of the NFL for 8 seasons. He's an NFL analyst for SB Nation, Sirius XM NFL. Also, you hear him here on the DA show regularly, which we always love, our friend Jeff Schwartz. Mr. Schwartz, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm just looking up Tom Brady's results on Miami right now for an article. Like, there's no explanation for why they don't win in Miami. Like, there's none. Like, I don't know. There's no football reason why he doesn't win these games. I don't know what happens to them.
It's weird. The only thing, I mean, yesterday obviously was very fluky, but the Patriots did not play very well again. The only thing that I've heard that kind of makes sense is perhaps that it's a dramatic climate change early in the year. September, October could be 95 degrees and very, very humid. Maybe that has something to do with it, but outside of that, I don't know. Is there another explanation?
I don't think so. I mean, look, they lost last year late in the season. They lost the year before late, you know, obviously today late in the season. They lost in January late. I mean, they've lost games. They lost a September game there in 2014. So I don't know, man. I mean, you know, the Dolphins have had so many different coaches and quarterbacks and personnel that it's not a game plan thing where you can say, well, they just do this really well and therefore Tom Brady can't beat them. It's remarkable. Obviously, the game last night, or yesterday, I should say, you rarely see Bill Belichick make an end-of-game error. He typically lets other teams do that. And the Gronkowski thing was interesting because the ball's on the 31. I mean, how many quarterbacks in the NFL can throw the ball that far?
Certainly not Tannehill.
No, I mean, not. I mean, you know, it's got to be at least to get from, you know, let's say he's just at the line of scrimmage to the end zone. It's 70 yards in the air. And then it has to be kind of like high enough to be caught in the end zone. Like, there's like 3 quarterbacks in the NFL that can do that. One of them is playing Kansas City. So I didn't get that move by him to put Gronk back there. He had no chance to, you know, I don't know if everyone's laughing at him, but come on, he had no chance to make that tackle.
Yeah, it just is a strategic misfire, which almost never happens from Bill Belichick. So let's even take yesterday's game aside. The Patriots have lost 3 games in blowout fashion to non-playoff teams on the road this year. And in those games, I mean, they've really looked very poor. When you look at how the Patriots match up in the playoffs, even if they get a bye, are you wondering if this is really a good addition to the Patriots, but perhaps maybe a mediocre one that just has the right helmet on?
That's a good question. Look, you know, the AFC, I think there really is. There's no favorite, in my opinion. I know everyone wants to say the Chiefs are. Look, I'm a Chiefs fan. My brother plays for the Chiefs. But their defense is really suspect. They're not going to win. They're, in my opinion, their defense is not good enough to win enough playoff games. I really, even if it's only going to be 2, if they win Thursday, they have the number 1 seed locked up throughout the playoffs. But, you know, I think New England, look, we count them out fairly often in these situations. And this has been atypical for them. But, you know, they should beat Pittsburgh this weekend, especially if Big Ben is hobbled, and with the Bills and Jets. So, you know, they finished 12-4. They're still, are you taking them in Arrowhead in January? Are you taking the Chiefs, who historically aren't very good at home in the playoffs? I think you still lean to Tom Brady and the Patriots. So until I see them not make the championship game, or excuse me, the Super Bowl, I'm always going to pick them.
Jeff Schwartz joins us this morning here on the show. Let's talk about what the Ravens were able to do yesterday to the Chiefs, because they were really able to hound Mahomes. Mahomes didn't have a great day. Kind of took a couple of late big plays for the Chiefs to pull that one out. When you look at Kansas City, is that what you're saying? They're a vulnerable potential number one seed because of those reasons, specifically the defense?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the recipe this year for the Chiefs to get after them is run the football and, you know, play some defense. And we've seen Denver do that twice now, play them close. We saw the Ravens do that. Now, obviously, you can choose to outscore them too, which is what the Rams and the Patriots did. And that worries me, right, is there's kind of different styles you can play the Chiefs close. The Chiefs yesterday, I will say this, I thought Pat Mahomes made some amazing throws. And those are throws that really no one else in the NFL can make, maybe Rodgers. And, you know, it's hard to say that those are always going to be there, but he keeps making them, and we keep wondering if this is ever going to stop, and it really hasn't yet. So credit him for leaning the team back in a game that it didn't look like they were going to win, you know, down 24-17 against that Ravens defense. That defense is really good. They gave Mahomes looks yesterday. He just hadn't seen yet. There were free rushers all over the place. It was a good learning experience for Pat Mahomes that they play each other again in the playoffs.
Let me ask you about what happened with the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday, because it is impossible for me to fathom that the Steelers, having lost those two games, would come out and play a relatively flat game against the Raiders. I know that Roethlisberger was injured, but what does it say about the Steelers that these three losses have all been in kind of collapsing, choking form?
There's some stat I did on one of my shows, I think, today, and I don't have the exact number, so don't, like, hold me to it, but something like double-digit road favorites are something like 60-8 in the last X amount of years, and four of the eight losses are the Steelers.
Yeah.
They play down to opponents quite often. The thing I didn't get about that game was, if Big Ben was healthy enough to play, he should have played.
Right.
Like, I guess you're saying, and it worked, right? You put him in at the end, they score a touchdown, then they allow the Raiders to obviously march down the field. You know, the Raiders, as much as we mock John Gruden, their offense has actually been kind of good the last couple of weeks. And it does take time. I say this quite often. It takes 8 to 10 weeks for an offense to really get going in the NFL, especially when you have a new coordinator. And we're seeing that with the Raiders. They've looked kind of competent the last couple of weeks. And it could be a sign that they're playing better, but you're right. The Steelers have now had three straight weeks of collapses. And look, the Ravens, with Lamar Jackson, I don't think are very are much of a contender. So Steelers can still win the North, but, I mean, they're looking at like maybe 8-7-1 year, possibly.
Jeff Schwartz joins us this morning on the show. That's interesting. You don't think the Ravens are a contender. They've got a really good defense, and Lamar Jackson might be limited from a passing standpoint, but he obviously makes some big plays. Why do you feel like the Ravens are not a contender?
Well, their offense is unsustainable. You see yesterday when he had to throw the ball, it's not very pretty. Look, he makes a great throw, then he makes a terrible throw. Then even on one of the touchdowns, he had, I think it was Andrews out of the backfield, but the tight end was playing a fullback or tight end. And the ball was just put in a terrible place. It was, instead of in front of him, it was low and behind him, and Andrews made a good job of catching the ball and scoring up and scoring. If you had to guess, they played the last four games, Falcons, Bengals, Chiefs, Raiders. They play the Bucks this weekend, Tampa Bay at home. If you were to guess the rushing defense for those five teams they're playing, where they rank, where do you think they rank?
Where the Ravens rank in the NFL?
No. The defenses they're playing. Last 4 weeks plus this week, the Bucks. Where do you think those five defenses rank as far as rushing defense?
Oof, those are not good rushing defenses.
That's my point. 28, 29, 30, 31, 32.
Oh, that's the worst five. That's the five worst rush defenses. Oof.
That's my point, is they're playing teams that they're built to beat, and they're sort of barely winning or losing. Mm. And that's my point about this offense. It's just unsustainable. You can't have an offense that can't pass the football in the NFL. I know defenses are making a little comeback the last couple of weeks with the Bears last night, what the Ravens have done. But you still got to pass the ball. I mean, even last night, the Bears, as much as they dominated the game, they still had a chance to lose because Trubisky couldn't complete a forward pass in four turnovers. So I think that we look at the defense and say they can carry you, but you got to have some semblance of an offense, and you have to pass the football. I don't think Lamar Jackson is good enough on a consistent basis to do that.
So the Bears just beat one of the best teams in football and completely stymied the most explosive offense in the NFC, perhaps outside of New Orleans. But you kind of find it fool's gold because their offense isn't good enough to keep up?
It is a weird year, man. And then we all get conditioned to you know, take the offensive team. And we have the Bears and we have the Cowboys playing really good defense. But I just I find it hard to imagine. The Bears have to win three playoff games, right, to make the Super Bowl. And are you trusting Trubisky? And I feel like you can't trust him. If you're going to New Orleans, right, and I think New Orleans will have the number one seed. They play the Panthers twice, who basically are giving up on the year. They'll get home field. They already beat the Saints. They have the Rams. They're the tiebreaker. I don't see a team that's limited offensively, as good as your defense, is going into New Orleans to win the NFC Championship game and not being able to score, 21 points. Because the Saints' defense, by the way, is playing really good. I think we ignore that. They only allowed 13 to the Cowboys. They allowed only 14 yesterday, beat down 14-3, came back on the road. So I think you have to be able to score. If you're not playing the Saints and you're playing the Rams again, maybe I feel differently, but you got to look at who you're playing in the playoffs, and I just don't think the Bears offensively can go into the dome and do enough to hold the Saints down.
Jeff Schwartz is our guest NFL analyst this morning here on the DA Show. You know, Greg Williams keeps winning in Cleveland, and my question is, does he need to get some serious look at full-time coach in the offseason?
For the Browns or for anybody?
And for the Browns.
You know, the Browns are not eliminated from the playoffs yet.
I know.
It's a good question. I would say, I think it depends on who you can hire. You know, if you can get someone like a Lincoln Riley, which is, I think, never going to happen in Cleveland, or so you can get some brilliant offensive mind. Let's say Josh Daniels, for whatever reason, wants to go coach in Cleveland, which I don't think he'd turn down Indy and then go coach in Cleveland. Then yeah, you make the change. But if they can't get anyone, and you keep Kitchens, you keep Greg Williams, that might be the best option. See, when we fire coaches and we look to replace them, you have to think about who the next hire could be. You can't just blindly fire a coach without kind of having an idea of who you're going to hire, because there's honestly not 32 great coaches. And that's part of the decision. So I think they've obviously put out feelers, I assume, already on who they might hire. And Greg Williams and Freddie Kitchens, it's a combination, might be better than anyone they can get.
Let me ask you finally about the Cowboys. Do you believe they can be a tough out in the NFC? I mean, they're not going to get one of the byes, but they're going to have a home game likely when they win the NFC East. Do you think they're a tough matchup, or are you worried about that offense like Dak you were talking about before?
I'm worried about their offense, and I'll tell you why. You know, I've not seen enough from Dak. I know people will say, well, 454 yards, but, I mean, two go routes, man. Like, come on. I mean, we could do that, DA. Like, we could throw a go route. and you're playing Eagles defense where they have guys off the street. They're playing secondary for them, right? They have five guys injured in the secondary. So call me a hater, whatever you want to say. I just don't believe in the Cowboys' offense still. You know, the Seahawks might come in there in the wild card weekend and beat. I would take the Seahawks over the Cowboys if they play in the wild card weekend right now.
Huh, really? So you think the Seahawks are live in the postseason?
Well, who are you taking? Are you taking Dak Prescott in that defense or Russell Wilson in that defense?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, look, I like the Cowboys' defense a lot, and I think Amari Cooper's making Dak look better than he is, and I love the ground game of the Cowboys, so I think I would take the Cowboys in that game. But I hear what you're saying. I think that the numbers for Dak yesterday were completely misleading. You see 455 and think that he just riddled the defense. That's not how that happened. He missed so many open throws yesterday, and like you said, two go routes gets 200 yards for him.
How about the game winner that should have been intercepted?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this is why it's important. I know people hate when you say, you got to watch the film, but there is value in watching football. I mean, if you just look at stat lines, they can often be misleading.
Jeff Schwartz joining us, NFL analyst, breaking it all down on a Monday after the NFL weekend. Jeff, as always, thank you, brother. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Take care, bud.
You too. Follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Schwartz. When we come back, let's talk about that Steelers loss, and let's talk about this three-game losing streak by Pittsburgh, and let's talk about Mike Tomlin not going to Ben Roethlisberger, even though Roethlisberger was healthy to go in after halftime yesterday. Let's talk about all of that with former Steeler Max Starks, who has won a Super Bowl with the Steelers, coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Morning's Mothership.
Oh, okay.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
22 minutes past the hour. Appreciate you being with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for being with us. And as always, remember, full episodes are available on iTunes and best of clips available on YouTube. Search the DA Show on YouTube every single day, and you'll get to see the best of moments of the show, including all of the 12 DAs of Christmas as we release them. Joining us here on the show is a guy that's won a pair of Super Bowls. He knows Mike Tomlin, he knows the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he can hopefully provide some insight into what is going on in Pittsburgh. NFL analyst Max Starks joining us this morning on the show. Max, good morning.
Good morning, DA. How are you?
I'm doing great, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us. And let's talk about this game. Let's go full hog into it, because there's a lot on the line right now in a three-game losing streak for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What to you was the most disappointing, the most frustrating thing to see out of that Steelers loss yesterday?
I think the biggest thing to see was how much Jared Cook was, how effective he was in the passing game for the Raiders, knowing that he was pretty much the main guy offensively for Derek Carr, and how there wasn't a steady game plan to either double or jam him on the line of scrimmage, affect him in his route running. I thought that was very telling, because he really got the momentum going early in that contest and gave the Raiders a lot of confidence.
What do you make of Mike Tomlin admitting that Ben Roethlisberger was healthy enough to come in and play, but he held him out for a couple of series and allowed Josh Dobbs to play?
That was a head scratcher, I will say, at the least. I thought that, you know, knowing how Ben is and how tough he is, I mean, he's a warrior when it comes to fighting through injury and wanting to compete. I thought it was a head scratching moment for him to come out. Well, took a lot of brass to admit that was an option. And then secondly, of course, to actually hold him back, even though Josh Dobbs was struggling in that contest. He didn't really have continuity with the receivers and with the line. The line had a tough day yesterday as well, but still, I mean, Ben was very effective when he was in the game. So it was a very frustrating moment to hear that.
Well, why do you think he did that? Because Dobbs was struggling, and Tomlin said that it was because of the rhythm of the game and the rhythm of the offense, but it didn't seem like Dobbs had any rhythm. So do you think it was just they thought they could win without having to allow Ben to go back out there and maybe get re-injured? In other words, they didn't take the Raiders seriously enough to have to put him back in?
I think it could have been a case of that, because here's the thing. In order for the Steelers to move forward and potentially make it to the playoffs, you need a healthy Ben Roethlisberger. And at that point, he might have heard what the diagnosis was, how Ben was feeling. He might have seen something and made a judgment call that said, you know what, let me just rest him a little bit longer, allow him to feel a little bit better before we put him in there. Because, I mean, a rib injury is something that's very significant, especially when you're talking about a quarterback and as much body rotation as you have with the trunk and throwing a football. So I think he was probably a little worried about that, and especially the type of hit that he took. I mean, it looked pretty bad having a D lineman fall on you, on your side. So I think he was trying to be cautious, and he felt that maybe Josh Dobbs was going to pick it up, because Josh Dobbs has shown signs earlier that he had a bit more comfort level than I think maybe a Mason Rudolph would have at that point. So he was trying to see if he could work out through the funk, just so you can always give him meaningful reps. But at the same time, you're trying to win this game, and you're already on a two-game losing streak. You got to pull out those stops to keep your lead in the AFC North.
Max Starks is a two-time Super Bowl champion, a former Steeler. He joins us here on the show. You know, the Steelers in this three-game losing streak have nearly coughed up the division. Luckily for them, the Ravens lose again yesterday, but the bye is now out the window, and now they stare a four-game losing streak in the face with the Patriots coming into town at Heinz Field. They found all different types of ways to lose. It was kind of a lethargic effort against the Broncos a couple of weeks ago. They lost the big lead against the Chargers. Now this game against the Raiders, what's the common theme here? What's going wrong every week for Pittsburgh?
Well, I mean, it seems that, you know, the defense is in this point where they're put it this way, they're spread thin. They're not optimal at the linebacking position, and it's starting to show itself because when you think of the common theme, it's over the middle, those intermediate passing routes, crossing routes, tight end play are all common factors in their losses. The linebackers, because if you're having to blitz and then you're having to bail your corners, which means you're having to have them kind of play deep and quarter half or playing cover four defense where you got four DBs back and try not to get beat over the top, and then you're leaving the middle wide open. I mean, the Chargers game was a prime example. Keenan Allen made a living in the middle of the field, and the linebackers just simply can't cover. They don't have that Ryan Shazier guy who can make up space, make up ground. And I think that's where you're seeing the deficiency. The D-line is tough. They can apply pressure at times. Has to be a little creative. But the corners can do well when you have the middle of the field protected and they just have to focus on the receiver. So that's been one of the main cruxes. And then, of course, losing James Conner, now you have an ineffective running game to keep yourself balanced. And I think that's also playing a role because Conner out, Jalen Samuels, Stephen Ridley are good, but they're backups for a reason. And you saw their ineffectiveness in the run game yesterday.
An NFC equivalent to what has happened to the Steelers might be the Carolina Panthers. The Steelers still control their own destiny in getting into the playoffs and winning the AFC North. The Carolina Panthers do not. But the Panthers are now on a five-game slide here. At one point of the season, they looked like a real serious Super Bowl contender, or at least playoff contender. What has gone so wrong for the Panthers, and do they need to make a coaching change of the offseason?
I think it's been tough. The defense is not as stout as it used to be, but offensively, you know, you have a good 1-2 punch in the backfield with Cam and Christian McCaffrey, but outside of Christian at the running back position, you ask him to do so much, you need more from your wide receiving core. Now, granted, yesterday, at the end of that game when Carolina could have won that contest, Cam was making some very hard throws there. I didn't see touch on, especially those two shots at the end zone, where they could have came away with a touchdown. Cam just zipped it in there, and he needed to put a little touch on both those footballs. And then at the end of the game, that last interception to Demaryius Randall, he just absolutely fired a rope, but he fired it into triple coverage. And Demaryius Randall, he overthrew Funchess, and Demaryius Randall was just standing there, just jumped up, was like, oh, thanks for throwing me the ball. I wasn't running your route. But so I think that was a tough thing, is that Cam's decision-making late in that game, when the pressure got tough, he didn't have the touch necessary. And I didn't see enough versatility from him out of some of the run packages, like giving him a couple more RPOs in the contest to really make him effective late down the stretch and give the Browns some fits.
Max Starks joins us this morning on the show. I want to wrap up with the Houston Texans. They missed a golden opportunity yesterday for a bye. The Patriots lost. The Texans win. Had they won out, the Texans would be the 2 seed potentially, and the Patriots would have to play on wild card weekend, which they don't ever do, and then go to a Super Bowl. But the Texans end up losing at home to the Colts, coming off that dreadful game against the Jacksonville Jaguars last week. What do you think? Texans contenders or pretenders?
I still put the Texans in the contender category. I think still to go into NRG Stadium is a tough out for anybody. The thing is, when you get into divisional games, it all logic, all kinds of normal things that should happen go out the window. And the Colts already had the number of the Texans previously, so you know, it was no surprise that they came in and played the way they did. T.Y. Hilton had an absolutely phenomenal day. You know, the Texans are down at their defensive back position, and they weren't getting the pass rush that they're accustomed to when you think of their 9-game win streak. J.J. Watt was frustrated the entire day. Jadeveon Clowney gives up a costly false start or offsides penalty late in that contest to give them the first down at the 2-minute drill and effectively run the clock out. So, you know, you think of how that is. It's just a crazy game, and anytime you're playing a division foe, you can't take anything for granted, because, I mean, we look at what happened in Miami and New England, and the fact that Tom Brady is probably the only stadium in America that Tom Brady has a losing record in. Those type of things happen. So I still like the Houston Texans. I still think they're a good squad. It's just, you know, they met a team that knew their deficiencies and exploited those.
Max Starks joining us this morning on the show. Max won a pair of Super Bowls in Pittsburgh for the Steelers. You can follow him on Twitter for the latest NFL analysis at MaxStarks78. That's at MaxStarks78. Always great stuff with you, Max. Appreciate the time today, buddy.
All right. Thanks, DA. Take care.
You too, my man. Max Starks joining us this morning on the DA show. When we come back, number 9 of the 12 DAs of Christmas. If you missed it earlier in the morning, we'll re-rack that and then get to your epic fail of the morning as well. Patriots fans melting down today. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. We count down the 12 DAs of Christmas. Here's a moment that got stuck in the chimney.
They're not forcing you to do this. You are making this decision on your own. Is that correct?
I am making this decision on my own.
Listen, you got 5 seconds. See the time, all right? All right, hold on.
Panic attack. All right. Ready?
Yep. Got one, two, three, four, five. Get it out of there!
Go wash your mouth.
Go. Wash your mouth now.
I want my money.
Don't worry. You'll get it.
Don't worry about it.
The day that Mraz drank disgusting, dirty fish tank water on Boomer and Geo on WFAN for $1,000 cash, Boomer Esiason offered him $1,000 to drink filthy, green, scummy fish tank water. It was water that had basically come out of the coffee machine, the coffee maker in the cafeteria.
Yeah, it was runoff.
Water runoff from the coffee machine, but it was sitting there in an old, disgusting, scummy container for months, minimum 2 months. And it just sat there because nobody would clean it out because it was so disgusting. And then Gio said, "Would you drink it?" And Boomer said, "Well, I would offer anybody about $1,000 to drink it." And they said, "Who would do that?" And immediately Mraz came to mind because he puts disgusting things in his body all the time. And so there you go, $1,000. How'd you spend that $1,000?
I actually paid off my entire Atlanta trip when I went to see the Giants down there. All expenses paid thanks to dirty water.
Did you give a gift to Danielle with the $1,000?
No, I did not.
So you came across one girl for drinking pond scum, and none of it went to your wife.
Well, technically, I gave her... I paid $700, covered most of everything that was my Atlanta trip. I gave her $300 to put it in our savings account.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't need to buy... So technically, I guess she got some of it, right? It's towards savings.
I just thought that with $1,000 cash coming to you and she had heard how you got it, maybe you'd take her out to dinner or get her a little something.
You're probably right. In hindsight, that was probably a mistake. But you know what? What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
I don't think that's the appropriate usage of that phrase right there. Let's get to the 12 DAs of Christmas. That was one that was stuck in the chimney. It is time for number 9.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. The 12 DAs of Christmas to all, and to all, a good night.
Tired of it. Stayed up till midnight, get 5 hours sleep to have my ass handed to me by the freaking Eagles again.
You're actually crying.
These two guys. Let's break some more chairs, guys.
That's unfair.
You know what's unfair? Going after a 98-year-old woman of the church. Of the church!
What kind of pot?
A crock pot.
No, I don't believe I know what kind of pot that is.
He looks like a big boy, and that's something you would have said too.
I definitely would.
I am a big boy.
Mraz, you can take off the blindfold now and tell us if this is Miss Chicken Pesto.
Yes, it's a hair!
What a bowl of joy you are.
That's amazing!
The time is now! The place is here! And the whole wide world is filled with cheers!
April the 2nd, Mraz had gone on the radio Easter Sunday and ripped Sister Jean the Loyola of Chicago icon, and I came back on the air Monday morning and did damage.
Number 9.
And here she was getting wheeled out of there, waving to the crowd, wheeled out. We got 3 minutes, Sister G. Can you sit in your seat a little longer? Come on.
I had enough of her.
So Schwartz had enough of her. Is Sister Gina a fraud for leaving early?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? You know, her age shouldn't change the fact that you're not allowed to leave early.
We have losers on this radio network. Losers.
I embrace not having morals, and I don't care.
Mraz hosted Easter morning in for John Kincaid, and that's his take. And Bozo of the Year, Peter Schwartz, is right there parroting that dopey take.
Hey, I'm Peter Schwartz.
Yeah, he's not a real fan. Yeah, I mean, she's such a fraud. Blah, 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 blah.
These two bozos can't push away from the buffet for 5 minutes. One guy's wearing a 5X t-shirt because he can't shop anywhere else, knocking over the snack machine at all hours of the night to get his 17th ho-ho.
Fat lord.
The other guy doesn't know that they don't speak Egyptian in Brazil, and they're going to challenge a woman who made it to 98 years old. 98 years old! And has devoted her life to being somebody of spirituality, of religion, and of education. Mraz and Schwartz are losers. Of the highest degree. These two will make it to a wheelchair by the age of 50. At a gout. Diabetes.
Maybe tomorrow.
But they're going to challenge the fandom. The fandom. The dedication. Loopy takes. And it doesn't surprise me. Because all the junk food these two rats eat are just poisoning their brain. Hollow on the inside, hollow in their skulls. Not a living treasure, 98 years old, who's devoted her life to other people. No, instead we want to hear from these two self-indulgent bozos.
What matters is our plan.
We need their takes. These two guys, who are puffed up on junk food for their entire lives. My guess is everybody that questioned Sister Jean was self-indulgent, C-student, junk food-laden losers, which is what we have, apparently, on this radio station, which is good to know. Easter morning! Let's have these two bozos take up 4 hours of programming, because that's what we all need to wake up to go to church and have these two losers challenging Sister Jean on Easter! Let's break some more chairs, guys.
That's unfair. At least in my case.
You know what's unfair? Going after a 98-year-old woman of the church! Of the church!
I didn't go after her. I credited her for 15 minutes yesterday. You pulled a 30-second clip.
I mean, could there ever be worse programming here on CBS Sports Network than people getting up and going to Easter Sunday service? Going to service or mass on Easter Sunday and hearing Mraz and Schwartz rip a 98-year-old woman of the church. Could there be? She's a sister, for crying out loud. She's a nun. 98 years old. She's dedicated her life to the church and to students and to education. And you two buffoons ripping her. There is no worse programming decision in CBS Sports Radio history than putting you two together, slobs, Sunday morning, Easter Sunday, trashing a nun, a 98-year-old nun on Easter Sunday during people going to Mass.
Just because she's a good humanitarian doesn't make her a good fan. Should also be noted, if Easter morning wasn't enough, me in the chair for you, big guy, Christmas morning. So Sister Jean better not cross the headlines before then.
Yeah, that's this year's Christmas. Disgraceful. Let me just say also, if Schwartz is ever agreeing with your take, the take's wrong. Okay, that's official. I'm making that judgment right now in cement. If Schwartz agrees, it's wrong. You're on the wrong side of history right there. I mean, this guy's kid goes up to houses on Halloween and trashes Halloween decorations. This kid that he has trashes Mraz's aunt's Halloween decorations like a snot-nosed brat, and he's got the gall to rip a 98-year-old nun. Here's a little tip, Schwartzo. Sister Jean's son wouldn't be a 13-year-old brat that trashed Halloween decorations. I'll tell you that right now. if she were allowed, if she did have children, I can tell you this, they'd be slightly more disciplined than that Bradola. Okay? It's incredible. The doofiness. Alex tweets, how dare Mraz go after Sister Gina, woman of the church? Do you have any decency, Mraz? That's why you're a pig, and you will always be one. With this, I hope karma really hits you bad. Hashtag 12 Mrazes of Christmas. Hashtag, yeah, you like that, big boy. It's time for your Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Don't forget, you can always tweet at me, DA on CBS. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Mark tweets, what has happened to Cam Newton, DA? He's regressed so much they can't score inside the 10-yard line anymore with so many weapons. What is happening? I'll tell you what's happening. I think that the defense has always allowed Cam Newton good field position or to feel like he's in every game because the defense is swarming, it's punishing, it's physical, and then Cam comes out there in, I think, beneficial situations, and he's a great front runner. That 2015 MVP season, the defense oftentimes gave him short fields, turnovers, they had early leads, and Cam was great. He really was, and he was very deserving of the MVP. I think this year, as the defense and the running game has taken a step back, and they've been less effective in that area, it's forced Cam to do more. And that's where Cam is not at his best. And I think emotionally that locker room does not believe in Ron Rivera anymore. I think it's harder and harder for Cam to lead. I don't think Cam is great at that. I don't think he's great at bringing guys back or rallying the troops if things are bad or coming back from a losing streak. And I think it's all kind of collapsed in on itself. And I know that the Browns are improved, and I give Greg Williams credit. But the fact that the Panthers earlier in the season looked like a legit playoff contender and yesterday basically outwaxed by the Browns tells you all you need to know about the Panthers, and that's why Rivera is probably not coming back next year. Let's get your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. The Dolphins pull off one of the craziest endings in recent NFL history, and the reaction not only on our airwaves from Patriots fans calling in, but also social media accounts of video that has gone viral of Patriots fans melting down, especially elderly ones. It all combines into your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Oh my God, they won. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh.
Oh my God.
Oh my.
How do you lose like that?
Oh my God.
How do you lose like
oh
that?
Oh my God. Oh my.
How do you lose like that?
They won.
We just lost.
No, I mean
that. Last play of the game. No,
oh
no time left.
Oh, my God.
Grampy, all right?
How did that happen?
A freak play. A crazy play.
How could it happen?
How
could it happen? Where the f*** are they all? They got to keep the other end of the goal line safe.
Oh, my God. You knew they were going to do it.
Are you me? Look at us!
Matt is in Boston listening online to CBSSportsRadio.com. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, DA.
What's up, buddy?
Permission to come aboard?
Permission granted. What's going on?
Well, what's going on is that I'm ready to whip out this chainsaw and fire down a tree after what happened yesterday in Miami.
They won?
I mean, what the hell was that? Seriously.
How did that happen?
What the hell was that? Damon, this team, they are so freaking mediocre.
The Dolphins are going to win it!
This year. They are freaking hard to watch.
Angling inside to the 30, 25.
I've had it! I've had it! The coaching is horrendous.
How could it happen? Where the f*** are they all?
What the hell was Brady doing at the end of the first half? You know what?
Are you me. Look at this!
End the season now! I've had it!
I want good football, DA. I want good football!
I've had it!
I've had it! End the season!
Well done, Matt. Well done.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
So much goodness that happened this morning on the show. Number one, Matt in Boston is so angry, he feels like taking a chainsaw out and cutting down a tree. That's a really weird response to being angry. I'm about to cut down tons of trees. Number two, Grandpa in Boston, Patriots fan, sounds just like Frank Costanza. I mean, he's in meltdown mode.
How could it happen?
How could this happen? And then just Grandma Patriots fan is just epic as well. Grace, she died over 30 years ago. And our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Geico.com, 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Tonight is the DA show's annual mothership dinner. So we will report back from that tomorrow. We're going to get hibachi tonight. On tomorrow's show, we will update the crew how many shrimp flew from the hat of the chef into Mraz's mouth. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, everybody. The Mothership Disconnect.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.